you to want me.
If all of you come out to caucus tomorrow, we're going to win here in Idaho.
I speak to you today as a lifelong supporter of Israel.
I remain unwavering in my support for the Jewish state.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Welcome to the program, 509. It is Wednesday. It is the 22nd of March. It is Tuesday, actually, the 22nd of March, 2016. Welcome to another edition of The Opening Bell. We have lots to talk about today, a big show for you. We're going to be talking about a new mobile phone, a new smartphone designed especially for the disabled, by the disabled. It's one of the first in the world that is a touchless mobile smartphone. Also, later on, the problem with truckers falling asleep and what might be causing that. But first, ABC News correspondent Alex Marquardt outside the airport in Brussels this morning. The city's metro line has been shut down. Most of the city is actually being shut down. People are being told to stay at home this morning. As you might imagine, this is having an impact on the world stock market. Obviously, our first concern is for the dead and wounded. Again, 23 dead, 35 hurt. European stocks have fallen this morning. Safe haven assets, gold, government bonds have all risen after the explosion. Travel sector stocks, including airlines and hotels, are down. Even here in the United States, Dow futures have turned negative. The euro has weakened after the explosions in Brussels as well. In California yesterday at Cupertino, the low-key launch held at the technology company's Cupertino, California campus, rather than its traditional splash at a much larger venue, it was Apple, and they did not wow tech experts or investors, but the new mid-range model of the new iPhone is seen as a necessary counter to the dominance of cheaper phones running Google's Android system.
So some people asked us, some people even pleaded with us, to please keep the 4-inch products in our lineup. Well, today we're going to do just that. And we're going to make it a whole lot better. And as you may have heard, we're calling it the iPhone SE.
The iPhone SE's 4-inch screen is the same size as the iPhone 5C. The iPhone 6S, which previously had the smallest screen of the 6th-generation lineup, is 4.7 inches. The new phone has a 12-megapixel camera and starts at $399 for 16 megabytes of RAM. Also from Apple, from the world of Apple, the Justice Department has asked a judge, and the judge has agreed to cancel a hearing that was scheduled today between the FBI and Apple about breaking into that phone used by the San Bernardino shooter. The FBI saying last night in court filings it has found a third party that says it can break into that iPhone. So that hearing has been canceled today. We'll have more on that later in the broadcast as well. And speaking of technology and smartphones, the world's first touch-free smartphone, the Sesame Enable, is opening up a new world for people with disabilities. It was featured at South by Southwest, and this morning we're lucky enough to have the CEO of the company with us this morning, Oded Ben Dove of Sesame Enable Limited. Oded, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell this morning.
Thank you. Good morning.
So tell us about the Sesame Enable.
So like you said, we developed the world's first touch-free smartphone. It was designed by and for people with motor disabilities, people who have limited or no use of their hands. The entire phone or tablet is controllable through head movements and voice control.
We will get into some of the specifics of this later, but is this something that might revolutionize the smartphone industry and also provide a much-needed service to those with disabilities?
Definitely. To our audience, we're transforming lives. Think about being paralyzed at home, having no access to a smartphone, which has become basic for all of us nowadays. And then that can also propagate, like you said, to the entire smartphone space, like we see a lot of times with assistive technology and special needs.
We'll continue our discussion, our conversation about this in our next segment. It's the Sesame Enable. You can find it online at sesame-enable.com.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Stocks have finished the day mostly higher after shaking off early losses. Home builders lost ground on news that home sales fell last month. The Dow Jones Industrials edged up 21 points. The S&P 500 rose 2 points. The Nasdaq climbed 13. Like its slogan, here's a deal that covers the earth. Paint company Sherwin-Williams is buying former competitor Valspar for more than $11 billion. It's a move set to expand the Sherwin-Williams brand into Asia and Europe. Sherwin-Williams says it'll keep the company's headquarters in Cleveland. The move could eventually allow Sherwin-Williams to save more than $300 million annually. It still needs to go through an antitrust review, but could close in early 2017. Starwood Hotels and Resorts Worldwide climbed a little over 4% after the company agreed to be acquired by rival hotel operator Marriott International. The buyout, which could be contested by China's Ongbang, would create the world's biggest hotel company. Chuck Sievertson, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program, 521. We're following the breaking news in Brussels this morning. There have been a series of terror attacks there, explosions around the city, including two at the city's airport. The latest information we have from officials there is that 23, as many as 23 people are dead and at least 35 hurt in these multiple terror explosions in Brussels. Stay with WGN and ABC News throughout the morning for the very latest. We're talking this morning on The Opening Bell about the Sesame Enable, and we've got on the phone with us the CEO of the company that's developed this new smartphone. Oded Ben-Dov is with us. Oded, before the break, you were kind of giving us a thumbnail of how this works. You guys are billing this as the first ever hands-free or touch-free smartphone, completely touch-free smartphone. And the interesting part of your story is how this was designed by one of your co-founders, who's a quadriplegic.
That's correct. I went on TV 4 years ago to demonstrate a game that was controlled using head gestures. And I get a phone call the very next day from a guy saying, "Hi, I can't move my hands or legs. Could you make me a smartphone I could use?" That was Giora Livnet, who is today my partner and co-founder of Sesame Enable. Giora connected the dots. He understood the potential gesture technology has for people in this condition. He's a quadriplegic from a spinal cord injury, which means he's paralyzed from the neck down. And we set out to create a smartphone that Giora and obviously anyone else in this condition could use.
The phone, you showed it off a little bit at South by Southwest. You've also gotten a wonderful grant from Google to supply some of these complimentary to disabled adults and children in Israel. I guess we just all assume or presume that smartphones are available to everyone. What is having a smartphone? Why is it important, and what does it do to the independence of somebody who might be a quadriplegic?
So we're constantly discovering more and more value that our smartphone has to our users. And when we just set out, we thought, you know, independence. The person should be able to control the smartphone himself. And since then, one user of ours told us that practically he hasn't had a private phone call in 10 years since the accident. Because there's always someone holding the phone, dialing, waiting to hang up. So the privacy is important, just like for you and me, and for him, that was the ability to have a private phone call. Another user said he's been waiting for this technology for 15 years, because he saw the smartphone revolution sweep the world, and he was left behind. Another example is our co-founder installed a smart home system where he lives. So now through the smartphone, he can also control the light, the TV, air conditioning, and more. So it actually breaks that barrier of just the digital device in your pocket. It's not just the smartphone. It extends to so much more.
It's interesting that if people are wondering why you chose the name Sesame for this, it's all in how you get this thing to open and start. by saying open sesame, right?
That's true. Say open sesame, and all sesame devices in the room will open up and start searching for the user in order to pick up the gesture recognition.
There are going to be people who are listening to this morning that will want to get their hands on one of these. Is it available to the general public, and how do people go about getting one?
Definitely. It's available, and we've had orders from all over the world, including the U.S. Just log on to our website. That's www.sesame.enable.com. And you can order one from there.
All right. CEO of the company Sesame Enable, the new smartphone that is the first in the world, billed as the first in the world that doesn't require, that is a touchless smartphone specifically designed for people who are disabled. You can find it again at sesame-enable.com and on Twitter at sesame-enable. And Oded Benduff, thanks for being with us this morning on the Opening Bell.
Thanks for having us. Have a great day.
It's 5:26 here on WGN 720. We're going to bring you the very latest coming up at the bottom of the hour on the terror attacks in Brussels, and we'll have the rest of the day's news as well. As a matter of fact, let's go to the newsroom now. Vic Vaughn is standing by. Vic, you've been monitoring what's happening. Obviously, a major developing story in Brussels this morning.
Yeah, and we do have some new details of those three deadly explosions. We're seeing London's reaction now. We're also hearing from American Airlines in an official statement. Of course, two of the explosions were near one of its departure gates at an airport in Brussels. So we have all that coming up, Steve.
All right, it's 5:27 on the Opening Bell.
From ABC News, Tech Trends, getting teens more interested in science, technology, engineering, and math. Students in the automotive technology program at James Logan High School in California have designed what they say is the first ever student-built electric vehicle solar charging station. Senior Jasheen Tonko.
Our charging station is independent and is renewable and sustainable.
Teacher Iba Mohammed says he saw an educational opportunity for his students with Samsung's Solve for Tomorrow contest, which encourages students to illustrate the power of STEM to solve practical, real-world issues.
All the math, the construction, the wiring, very complex principles of STEM, they were all part of that.
And he was right. After pitching their project to Samsung, the school was named one of 15 finalists out of more than 4,100 entries nationwide. High school junior Nick Mackin.
See it actually work and finally be able to come together is just a really amazing experience.
With Tech Trends, I'm Joan Bennett, ABC News.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
It's 5:37. Welcome back to the Opening Bell. Billing and collection failures, weak internal accounting controls, outdated technology. The diagnosis is not good for Presence Health, with more than 150 locations around the state, including 11 hospitals, 27 long-term care and senior living facilities. Among its major hospitals, Holy Family Medical Center, Mercy Medical Center in Aurora, Presence Resurrection Medical Center in Chicago. Amit Sachdev is a business reporter at the Chicago Tribune. He's been writing about this. And Amit, welcome this morning to the Opening Bell.
Thank you, Steve, for having me.
Good to have you on the program this morning. You have, in your story, you've written that the CEO of Presence Health, Michael Engelhardt, is not a doctor, but he's caring for a sick patient. How sick is Presence Health?
Well, judging by last year's results, it's in pretty bad shape. Their financial loss for last year was $186 million, which is about 15 times more than their loss from the previous year. So judging just by their financial picture, it's he's got a lot of work to do.
Is there one area over another where the money is bleeding out of this hospital? Where does it seem to be the where are the problems in the chain here?
Mr. Engelhardt identified a number of areas. They are having monthly operating losses. So there is that basic problem that they're not making money every month. In January, he told during an investor call last week, he said they lost about $9.5 million in January, and they've been burning about $8 to $10 million a month since he came on board in October. So there's that basic issue that he's got to turn around. But there were a number of other what he called one-time events that he decided that he discovered after he started as CEO in October. The biggest one is around billing and collections. Every hospital they have to do a good job of when a patient comes in the door, they have to do a good job of documenting whatever illness the patient has. Sending out the bill, billing and collections is very complicated in the healthcare business, as we all know, because the patient never pays like the full rate, the full cost of the bill. There's if a patient has insurance, there's a bill that goes to the insurance company. The insurance company and the hospitals have their own, the hospitals give insurance companies discounts, and so it's a very complicated cycle. And if you're not billing and collecting time on a timely basis, you can end up having quite a large receivable there. The invoices start building up, and Mr. Engel claims that they had a lot of old invoices on their books, and that he thought were not going to be ultimately collectible. They weren't going to be able to collect a lot of their older patient bills, so he decided to basically write off a big chunk of them. Over $50 million in the fourth quarter of 2015. And that was a big piece of their operating loss.
How else is he trying to fix the problems there? It's obviously bigger than a Band-Aid. And are patients noticing this?
Well, the CEO says that this is not affecting their clinical care, and patients won't see any major issues, right now. But ultimately, when you're trying to fix some of these problems and you're spending money on consultants and lawyers to help you fix some of these accounting issues and billing issues, that doesn't leave you a lot of money to invest in your hospitals, right? So, and that's where long term, if you don't have enough capital to grow and invest in your hospitals, you're going to see that long term for the hospital. And so, when you talk to analysts and investment bankers who are looking at that chain, they say, look, this is not a good time to be having a lot of internal issues at a time when the hospital industry is changing so much.
Engelhardt is not a newbie to running hospitals. He spent more than a decade at Advocate, and he's tried to pull a few of the executives away from that hospital organization, has he not?
Yes, he is remaking his executive team. He has brought in a new chief operating officer, a chief strategy officer, he's replaced his chief financial officer. So he's making a number of executive changes and bringing in people that he knows and trusts, right? I mean, it's a pretty common move for a CEO to bring in people he knows and trusts. And he spent more than a decade at the Advocate Healthcare System. He was running South Suburban Hospital there for some time. And so he's brought in people from there to help him turn around the operation here at Presence.
As you go down the list of their facilities, Holy Family, Mercy, Resurrection, some of these legacy hospitals in the Chicago area, in your discussions with him, is there any indication that some of them might have to close?
One point he made clear is that he says he doesn't think there's any he doesn't envision closing any hospital. They're not at a point where financially they have to make that very difficult decision. But what I asked him, are you considering possibly selling off any assets to help, potentially build up your balance sheet? He said everything is on the table. So, and he reiterated that during his conference call with investors last week, because one of the bondholders asked him the same question, and he and the chairman of the board both said that, basically the board has given Michael the permission to have discussions out there in the marketplace to see if there's interest in any of their assets, including the hospitals. And as you say, as you introduced the segment, they have a lot of other nursing homes and long-term care facilities. It's quite a large hospital network and health system. And so they're looking, they're willing to entertain discussions right now, and they're having some discussions, he said, but nothing's imminent.
And they have been talking about eliminating positions, too.
Right. They are reducing their labor costs. They would like to reduce their labor costs by about $50 million by the end of the year to help shore up, to lower expenses and they're doing that two ways, he told me. He told me one thing he told me was that through natural attrition, they've had a number of people leave since the beginning of the year, and that they're not replacing those jobs, and that's about 200, he said about 200 positions right there. When I asked him about layoffs, he wasn't very specific, but he did, in his conference call, he did say that they would there would be a reduction in force, as they say, of about 250 people in the next 3 months. And by the end of the year, they hope to eliminate a total of 700 positions through layoffs and attrition. So that's about 3.5% of their workforce. But he said nobody on the front line, people who are taking care of patients, nurses, doctors, nurses assistants, nurse practitioners would be affected by this.
Amit Sachdev is a business reporter for the Chicago Tribune with us on the opening bell this morning with the conversation about Presence Health. Amit, thanks for being with us today. Hope you'll come back.
Thank you very much for having me, Steve.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program, 549. Of course, we're watching the situation in Belgium this morning in Brussels after a series of attacks. As many as 28 people have been killed and as many as 35 wounded. The head of the government in Brussels holding a news briefing now. We hope to get more on what's happening there. The markets have been impacted significantly around the globe, in Europe especially, the DAX, the FTSE, the CAC, all lower. In Asia and here in the United States, the futures for the Dow and S&P and NASDAQ are all lower. Let's get the latest on the commodities. Here's Orion Samuelson.
Steve, good morning. A lot to talk about in the agribiz community this morning. Wheat jumped yesterday at the Board of Trade. Again, weather was a factor because now they're saying we could get some extremely cold weather threatening to curb yields in winter wheat country. The USDA weekly crop reports yesterday took a look at winter wheat states. Colorado, for example, winter wheat rated 43%, good to excellent, compared with 55% for the same time a year ago. Kansas winter wheat rated 57% good to excellent, about the same as last year. Oklahoma winter wheat rated 63% good to excellent, down from 67% last year. And Texas winter wheat rated 47% good to excellent, and that's about the same as a year ago. Now, let's look at livestock. Tough day yesterday because lean hog futures hit their biggest daily loss since last December. You have a good day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
All right. Thanks, Orion. 551 now. Researchers say up to 1 in 5 truck driver crashes is related to sleepiness, and the most common medical cause for daytime sleepiness is sleep apnea, when someone occasionally stops breathing while they're sleeping, a situation that leads to disrupted sleep. In 2006, a major North American trucking firm started a program to screen drivers for sleep apnea, and what they found was quite surprising, enough so that the National Transportation Safety Board has gotten involved. Joining us this morning from Texas is ABC News correspondent Jim Ryan. Jim, how serious is this problem we're talking about?
Yeah, well, it's estimated, Steve, that up to 20% of all big truck accidents, and there are lots of them every day. You see them in Chicago. You see them all over the country. Well, it's thought that about 1 in 5 are due to drowsy or fatigue driving. And that'd be about 220,000 serious injuries every year, 9,000 fatalities involving those big rigs. And it's thought that a large percentage of those drowsy driving accidents are the result of sleep apnea, something that we've learned now is fairly treatable with the CPAP masks and medication that can help you to overcome that breathing difficulty as you're sleeping. There's a new study, Steve, from Harvard that shows that drivers, truck drivers specifically, who treat their apnea are much less likely to have accidents. If, however, they find out they have apnea and do nothing to treat it, they're five times more likely to get into accidents, serious accidents in some cases.
All this, you know, all along we've heard that sleep might be a problem, but the fact that sleep apnea may be the reason behind this, what does this mean now going forward? How is this? How will the safety community be able to combat this?
Well, it's really up to the trucking industry at this point. This study focused on 1,600 drivers around the country about 10 years ago, maybe longer than that. At least one trucking company and another has signed on, decided that it would screen its drivers for sleep apnea, and if they came back positive, they would be treated for it or offered treatment for it. So Harvard decided to go look at the drivers who both took the advice, began treatment, and those who disregarded the advice and didn't seek treatment, and started stacking up these statistics on crashes. That's how they've come to this number. So it's really up to the trucking industry going forward to decide, yes, we're going to go ahead and fund research or fund treatment and screening of our drivers, and then to ensure that they are safer drivers.
In many cases, some of these truckers are getting a little sleep anyway. Is this something, do you think, that's going to have to spread over into the safety community outside of the trucking industry to deal with this?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there may be further regulation down the road. I think that at this point, trucking companies want to try to handle this internally, handle it within their own policies before there are more regulations tacked on. I talked to some drivers this morning. They say that the regulation of the industry has become so strict that it's not fun anymore. There is a profit to be had if you're willing to work hard. But, yeah, sleep is a problem. And overregulation, according to some drivers, is a problem as well.
And sleep apnea, this presents a whole bunch of new problems, because just for the regular population, this is a condition that's very hard to treat because people don't like wearing the CPAP machines and the other treatment areas that are provided for this. This is going to add another wrinkle to that prevention, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And especially consider this, and in talking with drivers this morning, often they don't sleep in a hotel at all. They're sleeping in the cab of a truck, sleeping in the sleeper of a big rig. Now, some companies have begun to provide power inverters, for example, so that the CPAP machine can be plugged in inside the cab. But you're right, there are logistical challenges that come with this that truck drivers are facing that the typical person going home at night to sleep doesn't face.
And the numbers, though, just by themselves, whether it be sleep apnea or any other cause, should be reason for alarm across the country.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, you're looking, Steve, at a five-fold increase. Drivers who don't take the advice, who don't get treatment for their sleep apnea and go out and drive their big rigs anyway, are five times more likely to be involved in accidents. We're not talking about a Kia or a little Chevrolet. We're talking about a truck hauling 80,000 pounds in some cases.
And for those of us who are in those Kias and other little vehicles driving around, there's very little we can do to prevent one of these if something like this happens on the highway next to us.
No, and I'm sure you see it sometimes, Steve, as you're driving to work and you're out there on the Dan Ryan or wherever, and you see a big rig swerving back and forth, and you figure that driver's either very sleepy or something else is wrong. And there's little, if you see that truck coming up behind you in your rearview mirror, little you can do to get out of the way.
ABC News correspondent Jim Ryan with us from Texas this morning from Dallas. You can follow him on Twitter at JimRyanTX. And that is the opening bell for today. We just want to remind you that here at WGN, we'll be following the developments in Brussels throughout the morning. The Steve Cochran Show will have the very latest next. We'll be following it in news as well. Stay with us throughout the morning for the very latest on this ongoing story. And we will be back with another edition of the opening bell bright and early tomorrow morning at 5 o'clock. Until then, I'm Steve Krasanich. Have a nice day. It's 5:57.